hours throughout the night, mostly cloudy with a low around 27. We'll see winds out of the southeast 10 to 15 miles per hour overnight, gusting as high as 25 miles per hour. Could see about a half inch possible of snow overnight. And Saturday, snow showers will continue mainly in the afternoon. We'll see a high near 37. Southeast winds of 5 to 10 miles per hour becoming winds out of the east in the afternoon. We could see gusts as high as 20 miles per hour. Looks like snow could continue into Sunday. Coming up, Senator Lisa Murkowski and Representative Mary Peltola give a federal legislative update to kick off CompISH. That's after NPR headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. Russian forces have struggled to make significant gains in eastern Ukraine, and their attacks are slowing. That's according to groups analyzing the war. NPR's Eleanor Beardsley reports Western tanks and other modern weaponry have started to arrive in Ukraine.
The Washington, D.C.-based Institute for the Study of War said in its latest assessment that the overall Wagner Group offensive on Bakhmut appears to be nearing culmination. Wagner's founder, Yevgeny Prigozhin, recently criticized the Russian Defense Ministry for not providing his fighters with enough ammunition. Britain's defense ministry said the Russian army's attempts to storm the Donetsk Oblast town of Vuhledar have slowed, and that even local frontline offensives have become problematic due to the exhaustion of combat capabilities. French Defense Minister Sébastien Lecornu says AMX-10-wheeled light tanks have arrived in Ukraine, with some already on the front lines. Eleanor Beardsley, NPR News, Kharkiv, Ukraine.
The International Criminal Court has issued an arrest warrant for Russian President Vladimir Putin and a Russian official involved in the alleged deportation of Ukrainian children. As NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports, Russia has denied widespread reports of atrocities in its invasion of Ukraine.
Russia is not a party to the court, and a foreign ministry spokeswoman says there's no significance to this arrest warrant. Ukraine calls it historic. ICC President Pyotr Hofmansky says the judges decided to make these warrants public to try to deter further crimes.
It is forbidden by international law for occupied powers to transfer civilians from the territory they live in to other territories. Children enjoy special protection under the Geneva Convention.
In addition to Putin, the ICC issued an arrest warrant against Maria Lvova-Belova, Russia's commissioner for children's rights. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, Washington.
President Biden is planning to visit Ireland next month to mark the 25th anniversary of the peace accord between Ireland and the United Kingdom. NPR's Jimena Bustillo reports Biden is hosting Irish Prime Minister Leo Varadkar today at the White House to continue a St. Patrick's Day tradition.
The president and Irish Taoiseach both reiterated their commitment to supporting Ukraine in the war against Russia. Varadkar also noted he is looking forward to hosting Biden. To celebrate St. Patrick's Day, Biden is hosting a reception that includes a shamrock presentation. During the presentation, leaders will hand over a bowl of shamrocks, a White House tradition dating back to 1952. The reception will also include a performance from Irish singer-songwriter Niall Horan. Jimena Bustillo, NPR News, The White House.
This is NPR News in Washington. Demonstrators took to the streets in Paris today to protest a government plan that would raise the nation's retirement age from 62 to 64. The government is using a special constitutional power to push the pension bill through without a vote in the National Assembly, France's lower house of parliament. Rock drummer Jim Gordon has died at a prison medical facility in California. NPR's Mandalit Del Barco reports Gordon was 77 years old.
Jim Gordon was an in-demand drummer in the 1960s and 70s, a member of the session musician group known as the Wrecking Crew. He played on the Beach Boys' experimental album Pet Sounds and co-wrote Layla with Eric Clapton. He laid down beats for George Harrison, Steely Dan, Frank Zappa, Tom Waits, and many others. His drum beats with the incredible Bongo Band became legendary hip-hop samples. The L.A.-born drummer started out with the Everly Brothers and Derek and the Dominoes. In 1983, Gordon was convicted for murdering his mother and was diagnosed with schizophrenia. Mandalit Del Barco, NPR News.
Ford says it's recalling 1.5 million vehicles sold in the U.S. The automaker says there are two problems, leaky brake hoses and windshield wipers that can break. The vast majority of vehicles being recalled are Ford Fusions made between 2013 and 2018 and Lincoln MKX midsize SUVs. At last check on Wall Street, the Dow was down 384 points. You're listening to NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Doris Duke Foundation, which aims to support the well-being of people and the planet for a more creative, equitable, and sustainable future. And listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Kirsten Dobrath. Alaska's congressional delegation says species collapse in Alaska's fisheries is nearing crisis levels. Senator Lisa Murkowski and Representative Mary Peltola discussed the monumental challenges faced by Alaska's fishermen and coastal communities during their legislative update on the opening day of Comfish yesterday. KMXT has this report. Senator Murkowski and Representative Peltola kicked off Comfish's federal legislative update with a brief acknowledgement of the Willow Project's recent approval, calling the $8 billion oil development a win for the state of Alaska. Senator Dan Sullivan was not at Thursday's forum due to a scheduling issue. He'll speak on Saturday instead. But much of their time was spent detailing the uncertainties caused by species collapse in the waters off Alaska's coast. Murkowski said the declines in salmon, crab, and halibut fisheries across the state are at crisis levels.
I don't like to use the word crisis lightly, but I think crisis is the appropriate word here. And I wish that we could all tell you the exact causes. I wish that there was one single thing to explain everything.
Population declines that were once acts of God are becoming trends of nature, Murkowski said, adding that current fisheries management doesn't always reflect what's happening in the water.
Our management systems are not inherently nimble, and that's a challenge for us.
Alaska's congressional delegation has been pushing for more funding to study the effects of ocean variability caused by climate change. Murkowski said that includes money for bottom trawl surveys and programs through the Pacific Salmon Treaty. Murkowski said nearly $3 million had been allocated for research in the Bering Sea, and money from the bipartisan infrastructure law will also help coastal communities facing reduced revenue streams from crashing fisheries. Peltola took time to call out bycatch, which is the incidental catch of a non-target species, saying not enough is being done to understand and address the issue.
I just really want to be clear that I personally feel like we can be doing better. Progress has been made, but we can't settle for the status quo. We need to make changes at a much faster pace than we are today.
In a follow-up forum later that day, members of the state's bycatch review task force detailed some of what those changes might be. The group published a series of recommendations late last year, including the development of a statewide bycatch policy and updating the types of gear and how much bycatch is allowed for certain vessels. But according to the task force, shifting distribution patterns of marine species as ocean temperatures change also presents a hurdle to developing effective solutions. Murkowski said there needs to be a collaborative approach to address the whole problem.
We need to be working together to find these solutions because the challenges really are too great for anybody to face alone.
That process will take time, although Peltola noted that probably wasn't satisfying for anyone in the room.
Even if we do everything right starting today, it still could take about 30 years for our fisheries to fully recover. And we really need to be clear about the timeline that we're looking at. But we can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. We can't hold ourselves back from making every marginal improvement we can.
Peltola and Murkowski spoke for about an hour, including a question and answer session. Both also addressed the lawsuit against Southeast Alaska's king salmon fishery brought by a Washington-based environmental group, saying it was an effort to bully the fleet and they would stand united in fighting it. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath. The Environmental Protection Agency this week proposed the first ever national limit on PFAS compounds in drinking water. The chemicals have been linked to cancer, liver damage, and high cholesterol. The news comes as one Alaska senator continues his fight to regulate PFAS, which have been found in drinking water from the North Slope to Southeast Alaska at the state level. KTOO's Claire Strempel has the story.
State Senator Jesse Keel took the mic at a rally for clean water protections on the Capitol steps in Juneau. He said the EPA announcement is great news, but he still needs to pass his bill to stop contamination before any more gets in Alaska's drinking water.
The most important thing we can do in Alaska today is turn off the tap.
Keel represents Gustavus, where PFAS from firefighting foam has contaminated drinking water, soil, and berries. He's tried to regulate PFAS for years. Keel's current bill, SB 67, would outlaw firefighting foams that contain PFAS and require the use of safe alternatives. The foams are typically used on fuel fires at airports, and Keel says they're the main source of PFAS contamination in the state.
We all have to put out fires. Everybody recognizes that. There are safe ways to do it that don't poison our firefighters, that don't poison our drinking water.
Michelle Meyer was at the rally. She is Tlingit and grew up in Yakutat, where PFAS contamination from firefighting foams has been documented.
I drank the water at my elementary school for years and was contaminated, so I am coming to terms that I can probably attribute it to my exposure.
She was diagnosed with what her doctors called a rare form of leukemia when she was in her late 50s.
I want to see this bill passed so that no more children are exposed to PFAS-contaminated water.
PFAS chemicals are linked to cancer, among other ill health effects. But it's hard to attribute specific illnesses to them because they accumulate in the system over time. Meyer's son, Connor, joined her on the Capitol steps. He said he'll never forget the pain of seeing his mother so ill and preparing for her death. He also attributes his mother's illness to PFAS, and he says it could have been prevented.
All of this came because she chose to stay in a place that she was culturally connected to. And it scares me that living in the village is not responsible health-wise, that the inaction from the government and from community leaders around this topic have created an unsafe space for children to grow up.
Alaska does not regulate PFAS in drinking water. That will change when the EPA's standards take effect. The manager of the state's drinking water program is supportive of the move.
I think this is a step in the right direction.
Cindy Christian has worked for the state agency for nearly 25 years.
PFAS has been an issue throughout the country, and the EPA has committed to promulgating this rule.
Christian said the state will adopt federal standards when they're finalized. That will limit PFAS in drinking water to 4 parts per trillion, a tiny amount. Water systems throughout the state will likely be required to test their water and treat it if PFAS are present. For example, the municipal water in Fairbanks has PFAS in it. The levels aren't a violation because Alaska doesn't regulate them, but they will be if the new federal standards take effect. Patrice Lee is an advocate for clean air and water in Fairbanks. She testified in favor of Keel's bill this week.
Scores of lakes can no longer be fished in. The fish cannot be taken or eaten. In my very favorite family place, the Pile Driver Slough, where we've always spent Mother's Day, can no longer be fished in.
The public has 60 days to comment on the EPA's proposal. The agency expects to enact the standards by the end of this year. Once that happens, the state will have 2 years to adopt the new rules. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Claire Strempel.
One of the world's largest sea stars is on track to receive protection under the Federal Endangered Species Act. As reported by the Alaska Beacon, federal regulators announced this week that they're proposing a threatened listing for the sunflower sea star. The creature has been killed off in much of its Pacific habitat by disease. While the effect of a listing on Alaska and its fisheries is not certain, scientists say they don't expect significant changes in the state in the near term. Sunflower sea stars are found from Baja California to Alaska's Aleutian Islands. They can grow up to 24 legs and be as big as 3 feet in diameter. diameter. If the listing goes through, it will be the first for any sea star under the Endangered Species Act. A disease known as sea star wasting syndrome has wiped out about 90% of the animals across its vast range, according to federal scientists. It has hit a variety of sea star species, though sunflower sea stars have suffered especially severe harm. It causes legs to fall off and ultimately results in disintegration of the animals' bodies. Climate change may be behind the disease. The arrival of Pacific marine heat waves have coincided with outbreaks of it. And protesters concerned about limits on the power of Alaska grand juries spent 2 days this week advocating for their cause on the Kenai Peninsula and beyond. As KDLL's Riley Board reports, the issue is about a recent change to the grand jury process, which protesters believe limits the powers of the juries in Alaska.
A coalition of protesters based in Kenai are standing up against what they see as unconstitutional limitations on the power of grand juries to investigate corrupt public officials and of the public's ability to access the juries. Grand juries are made up of citizens and decide whether there is enough evidence to charge a person with a crime. If a grand jury determines there is enough evidence, the case then goes to a trial jury. A group of advocates, including organizer David Haig, has been present at the last several Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly meetings to spotlight what they say is suppression of the power of grand juries.
So those folks are misleading you, trying to strip the power of grand juries to get to the bottom of what's going on so they can insert and steer what happens away from what we believe is systemic corruption involving numerous judges, and now we believe it involves all five Alaska Supreme Court justices.
Haig himself has been speaking out on the issue for years, following his own 2005 trial for unlawful game hunting, through which he was convicted on several counts. He alleges the Alaska Supreme Court is corrupt and has limited the power of grand juries to investigate corrupt judges and officials. The protests were energized again this last December, when the court system amended its process for taking citizen requests for a grand jury investigation, making it so a citizen can approach the district attorney if they have an issue they'd like the grand jury to investigate. The court system says this was to accommodate a high volume of investigation requests from citizens. At the Assembly's Legislative Committee meeting Tuesday afternoon, Nancy Mead, general counsel for the Alaska court system, said citizens have never been able to approach grand juries directly.
Even though a grand jury has the constitutional authority to investigate, that does not mean that an individual citizen has a right to present anything directly to the grand jury. And this has never been the case.
This week, Haig and other advocates turned out to the Assembly meeting to support a resolution which requests the Alaska legislature hold hearings about the allegations of corruption. Assembly President Brent Johnson spoke against the resolution. He said he felt the issue was above his pay grade.
The bottom line is this. I'm really queasy when you're saying that we got the Supreme Court judges in Alaska and they're crooks, and you're saying you want them indicted. That's way out of my league.
Still, the Assembly passed the resolution 5-3 with one absence. The resolution only asks that the legislature host hearings and does not have any effect on borough code. The following morning, around a dozen protesters showed up at the Kenai courthouse at sunrise, many with signs reading, "Let the grand jury investigate." Although court system representatives say Alaskans have never been able to approach grand juries directly, Haig says he organized the protest to restore the right of the people to do so, and to show the grand jury members they have support from the public.
There's some evidence that the Supreme Court bypassed their own rules committee to strip the grand jury of their power, so I'm going to take that evidence in and try to give it to the grand jury and ask that they investigate, just like the public is supposed to be able to.
The grand jury was not in session Wednesday, so Haig was unable to present the evidence he says he has. Haig also organized court sit-ins in Anchorage, Palmer, Juneau, and Fairbanks. A handful of supporters turned out to the courthouse in Fairbanks, and at least 20 individuals showed up at the Anchorage courthouse, according to a photo shared by Haig. In Kenai, I'm Riley Board.
Food shortages, along with higher costs, were among the challenges experienced in rural Alaska during the pandemic. But Old Harbor on Kodiak Island had its community bison herd and gardens as a fallback. As Rhonda McBride reports, these were part of longtime efforts to make food more available and affordable, with benefits that continue to multiply.
This story starts with the Old Harbor Alliance, a group which includes the tribe, the city, and the village's native corporation. In 2017, they bought a herd of bison from a ranch family on the other side of Kodiak who was tired of having bears prey on their herd. The bison were barged to Sitkalitik Island, a protected space just across from Old Harbor. Since the 40 animals were brought to the island, a lot has happened. The Alliance recently built a processing plant to butcher surplus animals. Old Harbor freezers are now full of healthy bison meat, distributed to community members at no cost, with priority going to elders. Melissa Burns-Favoda, who manages the herd, says this journey has taught the community an important lesson.
Anything's possible. I mean, this was kind of a pie-in-the-sky dream that I've heard our leadership talking about since the early 2000s, and they kept on pushing for it, and we made it happen.
The Alliance took a big step in 2020 when they brought three bulls from the Fort Peck Indian Reservation in Montana to improve the herd's genetic diversity. The bison, which were surplus animals from Yellowstone National Park, had to travel in trucks, airplanes, and barges to reach their new home, but despite all that, seem very happy today.
They've got their little harems, and they've been there for about 3 years, so we definitely have their offspring out on the landscape already.
As the herd continues to grow and thrive, the bison have also fed Old Harbor's spirit with hunts that bring the community together, hunts that have also been arranged for those who have moved away.
It's kind of a way to reconnect people to their roots and provide for them at the same time.
The Old Harbor Alliance's long-range goal is to use the surplus animals to grow the community's cash economy through visitor hunting permits and meat sales. The profits will be used to operate the meat processing plant and support the community gardens, as well as Old Harbor's cultural programs, which teach children about their Aleutic language and heritage. Burns-Favoda says a lot of the credit for the bison herd's success goes to the Intertribal Buffalo Council, which provided both expertise and opportunities to build the herd. Last year, the Alliance bought another 4 dozen animals from another herd on Kodiak Island and is now reaching out to the entire island to help Old Harbor realize its dream of self-sufficiency. It's holding a fundraiser on Saturday, March 25th, in part to raise money for its programs, but also to educate islanders about the bison program and how different groups in Old Harbor have come together to help the community realize its potential. The event features a bison dinner and a chance to go on a bison hunt. For KMXT, I'm Rhonda McBride.
Silicon Valley Bank's parent company files for bankruptcy protection. I'm Nova Safa with a Marketplace Minute. It's been a week since regulators closed Silicon Valley Bank. What was left of its parent company, SVB Financial, today filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy protection. This does not include the bank, which is now operating as a separate entity under the control of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. The Federal Reserve says in the last week it has provided $300 billion in emergency financing to banks. The money was used to ensure depositors can be paid out if they make withdrawals at various institutions. Consumer sentiment weakened this month, down 5% from February, according to the University of Michigan survey. Year ahead, inflation expectations declined to 3.8%. I'm Nova Safa with the Marketplace Minute.
Kodiak, and welcome to the March 17th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. Mother Nature, always having the last laugh, isn't she? As much of a pain as it can be, there's something about a springtime snow that is still kind of fun. The extended daylight hours gives you plenty of time to get out and play in the beautiful stuff. Or to shovel it, if you have to. Growing up in Minnesota, we always counted on the last blizzard happening somewhere around the state high school basketball tournaments. I've noticed a similar pattern here in the 35 years I've been on the island. Guess when the state tourneys are here in Alaska? This weekend and next. Enjoy the blizzard ride. But once all of the snow, rain, and wind are gone, we'll still have all this glorious daylight. We're in the rapid gain mode now and have been gaining 5 minutes a day for quite a while. Monday is the day the sun moves north of the celestial equator, making it the spring or vernal equinox. However, Saturday is the equilux, the day where daytime and nighttime are nearly equal. In this case, we have about 2.5 more minutes of daylight on Saturday than nighttime, and we'll just keep gaining daylight from there. Add in the twilight, and you have a nice long day to go out and play on Saturday and beyond. Yee-haw! So don't be disheartened by a bit of snowy, windy, and maybe rainy weather this week. Spring is coming, and warmer weather will soon follow, with flowers, bees, and more. In the meantime, have some fun and get out to play in the snow for what may be the last time this winter. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Well, good afternoon. It is Friday, March 17th. The year is 2023. Happy St. Patrick's Day. Sunrise today was 8:19 a.m. Sunset tonight will be 8:17 p.m. That is 11 hours, 57 minutes of daylight, a gain of just over 5 minutes, 5 minutes and 1 second. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 8:16 a.m. Record high for today was 50 degrees back in 1989. Record low was 2 degrees. That was in 1966. Looking over at our marine weather from Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles, there's a gale warning today. Today, west winds of 25 knots. North of Dangerous Cape, north winds 35 knots, becoming west winds of 25 knots in the afternoon. Seas to 7 feet with snow and rain. And tonight, southwest winds of 20 knots in the evening, becoming variable winds of 10 knots. North of Dangerous Cape, south winds of 30 knots with seas to 12 feet. Looking at the Shelikof, there's a gale warning today. Today, northwest winds of 45 knots, seas to 9 feet with freezing spray and snow. And tonight, west winds of 25 knots, becoming southeast winds of 20 knots after midnight, seas to 8 feet, freezing spray and snow. For anyone heading over to Comfish today, you can just make it to the Alaska Salmon Price Report. That's at 12:30 p.m., so just in a few minutes to 1 p.m. Kodiak High School Coral Pod, that's with presenter Bruce Schockler. At 1:30 to 2 p.m., there's the state legislative update with Representative Louise Stutes and Senate President Gary Stevens. And then at 2 to 3 p.m., there is the opioid overdose identification reversal and CPR skills review. That's in Kodiak High School health room. So a few of those coming up for you if you have time to make them this afternoon. Few community announcements we have time for. Notice is hereby given. There will be a Board of Education regular meeting on March 20th at 6:30 p.m. in the District Services Education Room. That's F140 of the old high school wing. More information, you can contact Trinity, Secretary to the Board of Education, at 486-7566. And there is the Kodiak City Council work session on Tuesday, March 21st. That's at 3 p.m. The meeting is open to the public. The meeting will be web streamed, and the web streaming link and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak's website. You can also contact the clerk's office for more information, 486-8636. And one more, Kodiak City Council will hold a regular council meeting on Thursday, March 23rd. The meeting will begin at 7:30 p.m. and is open to the public. Public members are encouraged to tune in here at KMXT. That's 100.1 FM. The meeting will also be web streamed, and any information is available on the city's website. You can also contact the clerk's office for that. That number again is 486-8636.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the midday report at 12:20 and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Spotlight is brought to you in part by Creighton Chiropractic Clinic, offering chiropractic care and massage therapy in a peaceful, relaxing, and beautiful atmosphere. Located at 814 Resinoff Drive across from the high school, 487-9798, Creighton Chiropractic Clinic. We got your back.